Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
This is John West, Associate Director of the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute. Recently, my wife and I spent a fascinating weekend in Hollywood, California. We were there to see Disinherit the Wind, a landmark new stage play that explodes the usual stereotypes about the debate over evolution. The play tells the story of a renowned neurobiologist with new age sympathies who sues a prominent university for the right to challenge neo-Darwinian evolution. His argument is that neo-Darwinian materialist thought has become a dogmatic orthodoxy that stifles free thought. Discovery Institute organized a group of people to attend the play's final performance on a sunny Sunday afternoon in Southern California. We then had a post-play discussion featuring the play's playwright, Matt Chait, myself, and biologist Jonathan Wells, author of the books Icons of Evolution and Zombie Science. We taped the afternoon's discussion and are presenting excerpts here on ID the Future. Matt Chait not only wrote the play Disinherit the Wind, he also played the starring role as Darwin-doubting Professor Bertram Cates, who challenges his dismissal from the University of California. Matt told us a little bit about the journey he went on that resulted in him writing the play.
I went on a kind of spiritual odyssey many years ago. I came out of that with a view of the world that made a lot of sense to me, and that was kind of reinforced by everything that happened to me after. It just kept reinforcing itself. After we had children, there's a process when you have children. You get to meet people that you wouldn't ordinarily meet. There's play groups and mom and me groups and helping out at the school, etc. And I just happened to run into a number of scientists that were parents of children that lived in our neighborhood. And just in conversation, they kept saying things that I thought just didn't square at all with the way that I saw the world. You know, I would occasionally pipe in with something and they would look at me like I had just landed, from another planet. So when blogs came along, I thought, gee, maybe a blog is a good way for me to express my point of view in a way that I'm not limited to a soundbite. So I started writing this blog about the relationship between science and spirituality. And I came in with a spiritual point of view, and the more that I wrote it, the more I learned about science, just from what you can learn through Google and, hitting those little blue words and following them down the rabbit hole. And then I heard about the discovery. Someone wrote in a response to my blog, "You people from the Discovery Institute are..." So I said, "I'm sorry, I never heard of the Discovery Institute." But it piqued my curiosity. So then once I found out about the Discovery Institute, I started reading a lot of their books and got a lot of information from that. And my lifelong involvement has been in the theater. And then after writing the blog for several years, I thought, gee, maybe there's a way of combining my theater interest with my blog interest. And there it is. That's basically it.
After Matt Chait spoke with the audience, I shared a few thoughts about why I think this play is so important.
I love this play because I think it's a stereotype breaker. It breaks all sorts of stereotypes. It breaks the stereotype that you are anti-science if you question anything about neo-Darwinian orthodoxy. It breaks the stereotype that the defenders of sort of Darwinian orthodoxy are the defenders of free speech. Unfortunately, that's not the case in our current society. And it breaks the stereotype that you have to have a particular, say, a Christian perspective in order to raise questions about Darwin. I happen to be a Christian. I have a different perspective than some of the spirituality discussed in the play. But I find it really fascinating, as I've encountered numbers of people who are non-materialists, you don't have to be a Christian to be able to see that neo-Darwinism doesn't work and that there are deeper questions that we ought to be all discussing. Every few weeks I find someone who doesn't fit the stereotypes that our culture tries to say you have to fit in order to raise questions about Darwin. Actually, just a couple days ago, I came across an essay that Albert Einstein wrote. If anything you know about his theological journey, he didn't believe in sort of a traditional idea of God, or certainly a personal God. But he did have a sense of awe. And here's what he wrote in one of his essays. He talked about scientists having a rapturous amazement at the harmony of natural law, of what you find in nature, which reveals an intelligence of such superiority that compared with it, all the systematic thinking and acting of human beings is an utterly insignificant reflection. And I tend to think that that's what the real debate over Darwin is about. It's the mystery and wonder of nature, which you get a lot in this play. In fact, it starts with those wonderful animated things, I think from Harvard, I think, showing the complexities of what the wondrous thing that happened inside each of the cells inside us. Are those wonders fully explained by just blind matter and motion, or does that wondrous complexity sort of point to something more? Now, sadly, I'd say the one area where the play has a much happier conclusion than in reality is, in reality, a lot of the people who raise these sorts of questions, they don't get vindicated. Gunter Beckley is a distinguished paleontologist up until December at one of the primary European museums of natural history. Until 2 years ago, he decided to come out of the closet, so to speak, because he ended up having some real doubts about neo-Darwinism. And when he publicly talked about that on his private blog, suddenly his colleagues gave him the cold shoulder. As of last year, basically his administrators told him that your colleagues will no longer work with you. We can't officially get rid of you, but basically we'll demote you, we will shun you, you won't be given any good work to do, and so he had to leave. Richard Sternberg, many of you know, evolutionary biologist who is affiliated with the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History, until he allowed a publication in a biology journal that he edited that dealt with the Cambrian explosion, maybe showing evidence of intelligent design. His religious beliefs were investigated. He lost his office. He was, again, really belittled, and he had to leave. Guillermo Gonzalez is an astronomer. He helped discover two new planets. He wrote 350% more peer-reviewed journals than the standard for research excellence at Iowa State University, but he wasn't good enough to get tenure there. After he co-authored a book that actually didn't deal with the Darwin issue, just in physics and cosmology, the wondrous evidence of design. That was too much when he co-wrote that book. Brian Leonard is an African-American high school biology teacher who was a doctoral candidate at Ohio State University, was just a couple days away from defending his dissertation when three sort of ultra-Darwinist professors who were not on his dissertation committee heard about it and objected because why? His dissertation study was on the benefits of teaching students not just the evidence for neo-Darwinism, but also some of the scientific criticisms of it. And they said, well, there aren't really any legitimate scientific criticisms, so that's tantamount out to childhood, so how dare you? And he never got his doctorate because of that. Southern California is not immune to that intolerance. We actually have in our audience David Kopich, who for some like 15 years, or close to 15 years, worked for the Jet Propulsion Lab on the Cassini mission to Saturn as a senior computer systems administrator. His crime was he occasionally, voluntarily offered colleagues, those are after work, at lunch, I have a video documentary about intelligence design. Would you like to watch it? That was too much. Then there's the California Science Center, which is in LA, official branch of state government here in California. They rented their theater to a private group to screen a film about intelligence design until the Darwinist screened Bloody Murder. Then they broke the contract and canceled the film. Fortunately, they had to pay a price for that because we also have an audience, Bill Becker, the attorney who represented the group and was actually able to get an official apology and payout for that violation of their free speech rights. But typically, unfortunately, people don't get vindication. And this intolerance just goes on and on. My final thing I want to mention before handing over to Jonathan Wells to sort of talk about some of the cutting edge science that's going on that was discussed in the play, but he can give his perspective on that, is next week, will be something called the March for Science in Washington, D.C. Now, the stated goal for the March for Science are pretty admirable. The website for the march says, "Science works best when scientists come from diverse perspectives." Right. "And our scientific community is best served by including voices and contributions from people of all identities and backgrounds." Right. Yet when Discovery Institute applied to become one of dozens and dozens of partner groups, because we supported those goals, those self-stated goals, we were rejected explicitly because our scientists challenged a purely materialistic definition of science. That's actually what we were told. That makes your persona non grata in science. So I guess those aren't the kind of diverse perspectives that they are wanting. So what the organizers of the March for Science apparently really want is a march for scientific materialism. As this play shows, I think that closed-mindedness isn't good for our society. It's not good for science. And it doesn't really honor the approach of Charles Darwin himself, who openly admitted that a fair result can be obtained only by fully stating and balancing the facts and arguments on both sides of each question. I think that is what science ought to represent. And that's what this play calls for science to represent. And so that's why it was so fun to do this event down here in Hollywood.
After I expressed my thoughts, we next heard from biologist Jonathan Wells. Dr. Wells holds two PhDs, one in religious studies from Yale and the other in molecular and cell biology from the University of California at Berkeley. Dr. Wells is author of Icons of Evolution and its sequel, Zombie Science. These books meticulously expose how many of the standard evidences for Darwin's theory presented in textbooks are little more than junk science. You can find more about them at iconsofevolution.com. That's iconsofevolution.com. Here's what Dr. Wells had to say.
Well, first I'd like to say I really enjoyed the play.
Thank you, Jim.
And thought you did a masterful job of casting.
Thank you.
Really excellent. You're right about the science not supporting Darwinian explanations. In fact, things are much worse than you portrayed them in the play. But I won't go into the details. When Darwin published The Origin of Species, the myth is that he presented so much evidence that he persuaded people based on the evidence. Actually, he had no evidence at all, except for microevolution. He had no evidence for natural selection. He was completely wrong about the nature of heredity. He admitted that the fossil record didn't fit his theory. So the main reason people accepted The Origin of Species was because it was materialistic. And that, to me, is the nature of his theory. It's not really science. At the same time, Darwin published, another man, Alfred Russel Wallace, also published on the idea of natural selection. But Wallace did not believe that it extended to the human mind or human beings in general. Wallace thought that evolution had to be guided by an overwhelming intelligence. And Darwin was just absolutely apoplectic at this, because his whole point was to make everything materialistic. So as John mentioned earlier, I have a book coming out in a few weeks called Zombie Science that's about this materialistic influence in science. Zombie Science is actually materialistic philosophy masquerading as evidence-based science. And what it does is it takes images that have long been known to be false and uses them as evidence for evolution. And our biology textbooks are still full of them. One of them is a drawing or drawings of embryos, vertebrate embryos, showing supposedly that humans look like fish as early embryos. And the drawings have been known to be false for many, many decades, even a century. Some of the textbooks still have drawings or photos of peppered moths resting on tree trunks. These moths were mostly light-colored in Britain in the last century. Then they became mostly dark-colored as pollution increased. And the story was that the light-colored moths were eaten by birds on pollution-darkened tree trunks. And so the textbooks all use this as their evidence for natural selection. But in the 1980s, biologists discovered that peppered moths don't normally rest on tree trunks in the wild. And the story was, you know, basically fatally flawed. Anyway, all these and more images are still being used to persuade students of evolution, not for scientific reasons, but they're philosophical ones. And I think your play exposes that admirably.
I loved many things about Disinherit the Wind, including the casting, which was outstanding. One of the main characters in the play is a renowned British scientist named Robert Hawkins, who is clearly patterned after Richard Dawkins. And the actor who played this character was just like having Dawkins in the room. Although Disinherit the Wind has now concluded its run in Hollywood, you can still purchase a script of the play by Matt Chait at Amazon.com. Just search for the title Disinherit the Wind. In future podcasts, we will share some of the fascinating discussion with the audience after the play. For ID the Future, this is John West.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.